Today morning, we'll discuss the topic of preaching sensitively in Krishna service. So, Akhabi me Avinitasya. Guru Maharaj is telling Narada Muni that I am Avinita, I am actually not comfortable. But what is the reason for that? Kshatra Kuborubesha. Because I am born in the Kshatriya family. Ghoram. So very fierce way of life. Prabhupada translates Ghora here as intolerant. So I'll discuss more about this when we come to what intolerance specifically means. So Chaturvajopai. And the focal point of our class at this point. That Durvachobani, the words are like arrows. Na vinne shrayate yuti. So once my heart has been pierced by those harsh words, my heart is incapable of holding anything else. If the heart, Prabhupada explains the word like a pot. A pot is meant to hold water. So the water of truth, the water of wisdom, is to be contained in the pot of the heart. But if the pot of the heart is pierced by arrows, then those arrows cause the pot to crack and break. And whatever water comes in, it will just seep out. Nothing will stay over there. So he said, because my heart has been pierced, holes have been put in the heart. So whatever wisdom you are giving, I am not able to hold it. We also observe in our life, if someone speaks very hurtingly to us, then that thought, why is it like this? That just irritates us so much that nothing else stays in the mind at that time. Now, here Prabhupada uses the word mind and heart interchangeably. Because for all practical purposes, the mind is the doorway to the heart. The heart that we normally use, normally in devotional circles, we use the heart in the metaphorical sense. But when we talk my heart is broken, certainly there is no heart attack physically in the heart. So, the physical heart is not what we talk about normally. We talk about metaphorical heart means heart as the seat of emotions, as the center of our capacity, our faculty to experience emotions. And how do we experience emotions? Suppose, you know, I'm sleeping and somebody comes and insults me. What happens? My mind is not there at that. Mind is in some dreamland. So all of the insults that we've spoken, the mind is the doorway to the heart. So because the door is closed, the insult doesn't come in. So for all practical purposes, the emotions that we experience, they are experienced through the doorway of the mind. And this doorway right now points only to the material level of reality, largely to the material level of reality. And because this doorway doesn't point to the spiritual way, that's why we don't experience much emotions in relationship with Krishna. So we experience only material emotions. Because that's from where all perceptions are coming to us. Now, Abhinne. So here, it's an interesting analysis of Prabhupada uses. Nakshatram Ghoramapeya. Because of being born as a Kshatriya, I cannot tolerate insult. And Prabhupada is not mandating here that therefore you, what should you do? Actually, you will be Amani Namanade. No, just a few verses before this, Narbhuri is saying, how Kshatriya Tejasa Mara Bhunam Amrishyatam. How great is the effulgent Kshatriya that they cannot tolerate insult. That they cannot tolerate insult. So now he's not speaking of this in a negative or a critical way, he's appreciative of this. That inability of the Kshatriyas to tolerate insults is what or enables them to actually live on them. See, I would like to make a subtle difference between three words: honor, pride, and arrogance. Honor, pride, and arrogance. So, His Honest Radhanath Maharaj in his book Journey Home, when he talks about the six anarthas, lust, anger, greed, envy, illusion, and doesn't use the word pride. He uses the word arrogance. The words change their meanings as time passes. Not all words have the same meaning at all times.
For example, the word rape.
Now, in today's world, it's a very harsh word which indicates forcible physical violation of a woman. But that was not the meaning 100 years ago. And there was a famous translator of the Ramayana who translated the Ramayana. And there, the chapter where Ravana kidnaps Sita, that whole chapter he translates it as the rape of Sita. And now just a few years ago, normally any book that is written, copyrights are there for 75 years. After that, it comes in the public domain. So recently when that book was put on the public space, many Hindus protested, how can you use the word rape of Sita? Sita was never physically touched, she was never physically violated. So now there are online dictionaries available, which actually trace meanings of words at different times in human history. So, if we go back to about 100 years ago, at that time, rape simply meant abduction. It didn't mean violation, not physical violation. So, now sometimes devotees misunderstand Prabhupada's statement on this. Women like men who are expert at rape. That is not referring to forcible physical violation. He's simply talking about a man who is aggressive within love. So, the words have different meanings. And unless we understand the meanings of the word, in fact, the Catholic Church has a whole body of scholars which retranslates the Bible every 50 years. And they have, because words change their meanings. And because they change their meanings, therefore, you know, what was the word used 50 years ago? That may not be suitable now, it can be a completely different meaning. For example, Prabhupada's use of the word rascal. Now, if you go back to dictionaries at the 1920s, that was the time when Prabhupada learned his English. Recently on a website, one person asked a question, he was an English professor. He asked this question, now do you people, does ISKCON's philosophy consider the English of the 1920s to be sacred? So he said that, you know, he's an English professor, he says, all the preachers of ISKCON, they all seem to use outdated English. Now, the way the words they use, the language, sentences they construct, the way they convey their meaning, it is Victorian 1920 English. So why is that? That is because most ISKCON devotees have learned their English, especially the English that they use for preaching, from Prabhupada's books. And Prabhupada learned his English in the 1920s. So Suvakra Maharaj told me that now he was from the 1950-1960 generation, but somehow he loved the books that were written in the 1920s. And when he found Prabhupada's books written in 1920 English, that was something which made him love Prabhupada's books all the more. So the point is, English changes. Now we may not see much difference, but say we can all make out of the English 200-300 years ago, where, you know, di and da and dao and all those words come. So English changes. So what happens is, when Prabhupada used the word rascal, actually at that time, the word rascal did not have the very violently, derogatory, negative connotation it has. Today the word rascal has a very strong insulting connotation. At that time, the word in rascal was basically an affectionate form of reproach. Hey, badmash, kya kar raha hai? So, it was an affectionate form of reproach. That's why there is one lecture where Prabhupada said, Gurjan, who wrote this in his My Glorious Master. He says, Prabhupada said in a lecture, pure devotee prays to Krishna. Krishna, all these rascals are suffering mental existence. Please give them the intelligence to understand your rascal come back. So, you know, rascal is just a word which is passing through the vocabulary without any insulting or derogatory connotation. It's just an affectionate form of reproach. So, basically, words change their meanings over time. And that's why we cannot stay frozen, and especially those devotees who are trying to reach to contemporary audiences. Now, they also need to read, not necessarily contemporary literature, but at least be aware of the way words are used. For example, now, Prabhupada uses the word kali very frequently. But ISKCON, as for all practical purposes, you know, retired cult from its vocabulary. Are we being unfaithful to Prabhupada by that? No. Because when Prabhupada used it, cult simply meant a group of people. But in the 1960s, 1970s,
there were many brainwashing groups of leaders who came up. There was one person, Reverend Jim Jones, called himself a reverend, and he built his own farm community, something similar to what Prabhupada did in the Vrindavan. But he had a completely different philosophy, and he was like the king and monarch and god and everything for his people. And he had a lot of criminal activities. And when a senator came to investigate him, he was in Mexico, so a senator came from America, and then his followers, they attacked the airport, took over the airport and murdered the senator. And then finally, America sent its army. And when its army came there, so at that time, this Jinjo, he told that, now, soon deliverance is going to come. He abused, misappropriated Christian philosophy and the idea of deliverance day going to come. And he said, all those who have faith in me, all of you will be delivered. And everyone else will go to heaven. And how do you prove your faith to me? Take poison. And 1,000 people committed mass suicide. Along with him. And it was a horrible thing. And that scarred the American psyche at that time. And that's why people became paranoid about guns. And what happened is, especially, this Jinjo, externally speaking, is conceived exactly like Jinjo's to people. Because they had no idea of ancient and glory of Indian culture. But what happened? Jim Jones also said, you should not read any books except my books. So he basically cut off all channels of communication except what he was given. And that's how he thoroughly brainwashed his followers. And that's why when people started becoming Hare Krishnas, we talk about how the devotees by the brainwashing movement they were persecuted. But the brainwashing movement also had its rationale. That rationale was that they were alarmed, and there were indeed alarming religious groups that were there. And externally, we seem similar to those people. So, in general, as devotees, so since that time, the word cult got such a terrible negative connotation that we would have to stop using the word cult. We just can't use it. So, why? Because we immediately get mentally lumped with certain groups which we have nothing to do with. Now, I'll come to this point a little later, but this is a good point over here, that there are some hardline Christian groups which are fanatically anti-science. And they have the idea, now mainstream Christianity is quite sober and intellectually respectable to some extent, but as a hardline Christian, they're vehemently anti-science. And in general, we all try to make sense of people by placing them in some mental categories. Let's say somebody walks into this room, and then that person has a particular physiognomy. But it seems to be from the person seems to be non-East. Or somebody has a very dark complexion, seems to be an African. Like that, when we see people, in order to make sense of them, we try to put them in some pre-existing mental category within our mind. So, when we call ourselves a cult, then immediately people put us in that category. Similarly, if we start criticizing science and scientists so much, then especially in the West, not so much in India, but it's coming slowly. So people, who are the people who criticize scientists? So there are groups of hardline religionists. Now there are many people who criticize scientists. There are scientists also who criticize scientists. But especially when religionists start criticizing science, then people take it very offensive. Because often religion is portrayed as anti-science. So there are some religious groups who say that the earth is 6,000 years old. And then, I was talking about this extremist religious group, which says that actually if you surrender to Jesus, then you become free from all sins. All sins. What does that mean? That this means that actually there should not be any suffering in life. And all suffering is because of the original sin, and you are free from the original sin if you surrender to Jesus. And therefore there should not be any problems. And according to some extremist group, they say that all your problems will go. So suppose now I have weak eyes, I need spectacles to see. So they say, you don't need spectacles to see. You should be able to see. If I'm not able to be, that's just because you don't have faith in Jesus. Have faith in Jesus? Jesus made the blind have eyes.
So why can't you just increase your low vision to higher level?
So poor people, they are in college, they can't do it. And they say, oh, this is to get a guilty consciousness. Why don't I have enough faith in Jesus? That's why I want to use.
So the problem became so alarming that the American government has now made a rule that any religious groups makes any claims that interfere with normal medical treatment, then that religious group can be banned. That religious group can be banned. And it's an intelligent group. So the point is often when we hear, when we talk about scriptural promises, there's a Narasimha Kavacham Bhakshe, all your digestive problems will go away. You know, it's not that we stop taking the treatment because of it. We understand that the treatment is also one way which Krishna can act. So the point which I am making over here is simply that when we present us in a certain way, people put them in certain mental, us in certain mental, in certain categories. And if they put us in categories to which they are already hostile, then we make our work of sharing Krishna's message more difficult than it needs to. Therefore, there is an article in Back to God at now, you know, don't lump us with them. Don't lump us with them, because ISKCON is considered to be a cult and they have several differences. They are not a cult, they are a culture. They are there for thousands of years. It has been going on. And then many scholars also came to our time. And they talk about how Vaishnava culture has been there long, long time in India. And Prabhupada is a representative of a very respected tradition. So, again, coming to our discussion over here, that I am expanding the ambit of the discussion here. See, what here, the Durvachyamana, Durvachyamana, the harsh words came and penetrated Dhruva's heart. And then some good instructions also come. But this good instruction he is unable to receive because of the harsh words he has heard. Okay? Similarly, I am saying that we may want to give Krishna conscious message. But if we use words like cult, if we criticize scientists, then people's intelligence has already been biased because of past things that they have heard. So, what does the word cult mean? Oh, people who brainwash people who commit mass suicide. So foolish. And under the influence of some leader, they commit mass suicide. So, because of past conceptions, people's intelligence has already been skewed in a particular way. And that's why even when they hear the right thing, they are no longer ready to hear the right thing. And now here, Guru Maharaj, that although he is saying, Avinitasya, he is saying, I am not humble. But still, he actually is humble. In the sense that, he is at least admitting that I can't accept this instruction. He is actually saying, I can't accept this instruction. And implicit in that is that, please give me some other instruction. So, I just made a few points here which you can have. This topic of so 17.15 in the Bhagavad Gita is the famous words Anudvega Karamva Kyam Satyam Priya Hidam Chaya Svadhyaya Prasanam Chaiva. So Krishna says, first principle speaking is Anudvega Karam Vakyam. Speak in non-agitating ways. Why? Because thoughtless words can inflict cureless wounds. Cureless wounds. Prabhupada gives the example here that the pot is broken. It's very difficult to heal it. So, thoughtless words. Now, I'll explain this with a real life experience. When I was in college, at that time, there was one boy who was like a social leader. He was not very good in studies, but he was quite a good speaker. And he was also a little spiritually inclined, more rational speaking inclined than spiritually inclined, but somewhat spiritually interested. And then I had started a program in my hostel room, so the teachers would come. And it was nice classes, so I invited this boy to for a few classes. Then I invited him to the temple for a festival. Now when he came for the festival, somehow at that time, Puna temple was very small and we didn't have cell phones at that time, old temple. So he came to the temple but he couldn't meet me. And he met some other devotee. And then He used to read the books of a famous non-dualist spiritual teacher. Now, practically everybody in India reads his books if they are spiritually interested. And what happened is, he asked the Brahmachari, some devotee, what do you think about this? And that Brahmachari, he said, what happened? He thought, yeah, I have been faithful, I am uncompromising, chopping technique. What happened? That boy just went out of the school temple and went straight to that organizing mission. And he eventually joined that mission. He became sannyasi there. And now he is one of the most prominent younger generation leaders in that mission. So sometimes I meet him in conferences. So he has become completely committed. So what happened? Okay, somebody spoke faithfully. But he said, he thinks he spoke faithfully, uncompromisingly. What was the result? Yad gatva na nivartante. Just went away, never to come back. So ultimately, we have to understand that the purpose of preaching is not just to speak the truth. Even a tape recorder can speak the truth. The purpose of preaching is to speak the truth in a way that attracts people to the truth. The purpose of preaching is what? To speak the truth in a way that attracts people to the truth. And if we speak the truth in a way that repels people away from the truth, then we are actually doing disservice to the truth. We may think I am doing service, but what we are actually doing is disservice. So, now, this is an important point. Now, what people may resent is not the truth itself. We may think, that person was unsubmissive. Hey, he was envious. He was rebellious. A rebellious soul, envious soul. That's why he went there. No, actually, whether that is so or not, we don't know that. But that is between that soul and Krishna. What is between me and Krishna is how I present Krishna's message. So, generally speaking, the words that come from the ego trigger the ego of the other person. The words that come from the heart kindle the heart of the other person. So now, I would, for myself, when I speak strongly, I will assume that my strong words are coming from my ego. My fathers are so advanced enough that they can speak strong words coming from their heart. Now I offer my obeisances. But I am not at that level. And more importantly, even if my words are coming from the heart, actually, now Prabhupada spoke very strongly. First of all, it was not that Prabhupada spoke strongly all the time. See, Prabhupada is a warrior. And a warrior knows which weapons to use when. So we may talk about Prabhupada talking about fools and rascals and this and that. But then, in the Bhakti Sultan, he repeatedly said, and once in a meeting he told us also that he did not like this book, Life Comes From Life, to be distributed to the people in general. Because he said that was a private conversation among Prabhupada and his disciples. And in 1976-77, when Prabhupada organized the first World Life Comes From Life conference. So at that time, Bhakti Sultan asked Prabhupada, how should we deal with the scientists? So he said, be courteous, be gentle. And in fact, in order to just quote the scientists, he told them, we also have simple quotes. So he said, the way Prabhupada trained us was to be very courteously. In fact, there was one letter in 1975 or something. One devotee wrote a letter to Prabhupada saying that, actually, I would like to transcribe all your lectures so that I can better understand your message. So, Prabhupada surprisingly replied, that would be prayas, it's not required. He said, actually, all the matter I want to give, I have given in my purpose. So, there's no need to transcribe lectures. Now, even the wire lectures will transcribe. The point which Prabhupada was making over there is that the books are far more important than the purpose. And if you see in the books, Prabhupada's mind is very measured. So, right in the Vedavesi itself, Jayadev Maharaj in the front page of Vedavesi says that Prabhupada has given us his mani in 4 weeks. His purports, his lectures, his room conversations,
or conversations and his letters. And he says, although all four are pramanas, the highest pramana is purports. Because purports is actually addressing the world. He's addressing the world. And in the lectures, he's addressing a particular audience. And there are some lectures in the storm who say that if you want me to give a candidate class, stop recording my class. Because if your class is being recorded, I'm always worried that what I speak may be taken out of context by others. And therefore, they often hesitate to have their classes recorded. But often when we give a class, we speak to a particular audience, with a particular audience in mind. And group conversations are often even more visible. And letters may be even more private. So therefore, it's not also. Now, the thing is that Prabhupada's strong of speaking, that was a strategy. And it was just one of the strategies. When I was talking to Dhruva about this, so he told me that, you know, Prabhupada has preached in a way which is very, Prabhupada has preached at different times in the way I am preaching, and Prabhupada has preached in the way at different times in the way another small leader is going to preach. The point is that Prabhupada helped people to come close to Krishna. So, whichever way we can get people to Krishna, that is the way we can do it. And by doing that, we are faithful to Prabhupada. So, I'll give an example of this. Now, we say that, okay, I'll give 2 points in this. First is that Prabhupada himself used different strategies. In the rest of the world, Prabhupada made 2 relatively famous people. Of course, many, but from the early, in the decade of the 60s. He first met when he was in New York, he met Allen Ginsberg. And then when he was in the turn of the century, turn of the decade, he met George Harrison in London. Now, both of them were famous people who were already somewhat spiritually inclined. And because they were spiritually inclined, so they had already familiarized themselves with many of the spiritual teachers from the past who had come. So, now, when Allen Ginsberg met with Prabhupada, at that time, what happened? You know, Allen Ginsberg talked about a particular Indian Swami who had come and he was very influenced by that. And Prabhupada spoke very cuttingly about it. Allen Ginsberg was shocked. And this is there in the Navarro also. And he says at one level, he appreciates it. He said, till then I had a very naive vision that every spiritual teacher must have been, should be good. But Bhaktivedanta Swami gave me a critical vision. Often. But then he says, that critical vision I use against him also. And that's why, although Allen Ginsberg became favorable, he never became favorable. He never, there is a whole chapter in the Hare Krishna explosion, which is called this is something like the poet and the seer. So, there was like 7 days. You know, Allen Ginsberg and Prabhupada, they would meet and almost like several hours they would have a discussion. And Hagen goes, all the devotees in the new town were waiting with bated breath. At one point, just as Prakash Haran says, they fell at the feet of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Allen Ginsberg will feel it to fall at the feet of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and surrender to them. But that never happened. And then he finally said, Swamiji, I like your message and my best wishes with you. And he left with him. So, when Prabhupada met George Harrison, now we have one conversation of Prabhupada and George Harrison in Chandler Vihar. If you go to Vedabase, it's a part of a much longer conversation. And some extracts from that are put in Chandler Vihar. So now at that time, George Harrison spoke. You know, he was eclectic. Eclectic means to draw from various sources. So he said, oh, Swami, you know, this teacher says this and that teacher says that. And what did Prabhupada do? Prabhupada did not comment on that. Prabhupada, he let him speak and Prabhupada continued speaking his message. Prabhupada did not speak one word appreciating nor one word criticizing. And then overall, George Harrison liked Prabhupada very much and then he came for a comment. Many, you know, he funded Krishna, he gave the George Harrison and George Harrison mansion. And most importantly, he made the Hare Krishna mantra so popular. So now, what do we see over here? Prabhupada is just using different strategies at different times. And he interacted with different people. And even Allen Ginsberg, he was appreciated. And he had also Prabhupada in many ways. John Harrison has much more ways. So the point here is that Prabhupada is a general, and a general can use different strategies at different times. And the point is that we need to find out what works. So, now another important point is, often we take Prabhupada's strong statements out of the culture within which those statements are made. What do we mean by out of the culture? First of all, Prabhupada, we should also remember when he was at the Mishra Yoga Studio in New York, he had strong differences of opinion with his Mayavadi teacher. You know, when Prabhupada went to America, he was staying at Mishra Studio, at his place, because he did not have another place to sit. And Prabhupada had strong differences of opinion, but still, Prabhupada was cooking for him every day. The cooking for him, feeding him. And despite the difference of opinion, what does Mishra say? He says that, you know, I was so busy in my work that I was quite unregulated by meditating. Bhaktivedanta Swami would make me eat regularly. Now, what do you mean by make me eat regularly? You not only cook for such a person, you make him call it, eat the food now. So, there is an overall culture where a human being is valued, but the opinions are opposed. So what happens is, we just take Prabhupada's statements out of the culture, and the result of that is, we just come off as very insensitive, very harsh, and sometimes even people just, as if they can have curious moods, just become alienated. So, Prabhupada is a warrior, and another important point I will make over here now, that strategies have to change according to time and circumstances. And if the ground reality changes, the strategies also need to change. Yesterday I was talking about the First World War. It was characterized by trench warfare. Trench warfare means both the armies would dig trenches and they would bury themselves under the trench in the country. And then they would just shoot arrows from above. So anybody who comes out of the trench to move forward, that person will be shot dead. But this strategy, we can use this in the Second World War. Why? Because by that time, airplanes had come. So, if somebody put themselves in trenches, those trenches would become their graves. Because the bombs will come from above and destroy them. The same strategy that worked very well at one time may not work at another time. And Prabhupada himself cautioned us about this. Now, devotees asked Prabhupada, should we speak like this, the way you are speaking? Prabhupada said that, I am a heavenly gentleman. And even Prabhupada's age added some authority to his presentation. So, Prabhupada said that you have to be careful. You have to be careful. So, the point is that times have changed. So, what are the ways the times have changed? That's what we'll discuss now. The self-righteous make the right seem wrong. Self-righteously, it's self-righteous. I'm right and I'm proud of being right. I'm proud of being right. So, people today come from a culturally and intellectually authority-defined background. Authority, culturally and intellectually. Culturally, we see that in the West, as well as now increasingly in India, children don't respect the authority of their parents. Children don't respect the authority of their teachers. And in general, there is an authority-defined background.